Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today on the show, we have Honeywell's Mike Noyes here to talk to us about smart manufacturing, industrial IIoT, a couple topics that I've been interested in and wanting to talk about for a little bit while now. We're going to dive into what is a smart factory. We're going to explain the difference between the IoT that we typically think about and know about and industrial IoT.
The IIoT?
IIoT,
yes. Sir.
We're going to get into some of the benefits, how integration works, talk about smart manufacturing in a COVID world. So it's going to be pretty exciting. Stay tuned with us. It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
As I mentioned, our guest today is Michael Noyes. He is the Honeywell Vice President and General Manager for Mobility, Scan, and Print. It sounds like you got a lot of responsibility. Mike, tell us a little bit about what really you do at Honeywell and kind of how you got there.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you. So as you said, I'm the Vice President and General Manager for what we call our productivity products business. And we have mobile computers, scanners, printers, full line service business, and really drive a lot of the product innovation, where we're heading with the technology stacks, where we're heading with the product stacks. A lot of voice of customer. It's a tremendous amount of time. As you can imagine, this industry, we cover almost every vertical and just thousands and thousands of customers across the globe. So tremendous amount of time looking at the feedback, understanding where the market is, where are these technology trends, you know, and talking about things such as IoT, IIoT, as you mentioned, 5G. That's real key for us because, you know, we've got to place our bets and make our investment and be thinking out 18, 24, 36 months in these roadmaps and where we're heading with the product. So, you know, tremendous amount of work focused on that. And I've got a great team behind me, international team of product managers, offering managers, as we call them, based over in Suzhou, over in China, where one of our big facilities is at, and as well here in the United States, kind of sprinkled out at a few locations in the United States. And then real quick, I've been with the company just right around 2 years right now. My background primarily is in aerospace and defense, spent a lot of time with General Electric, and obviously knew Honeywell from the aerospace side of the house, and was really excited to have the opportunity to come over and join them and honored to lead a big, important business for them. It's been a fun 2 years.
Awesome. And he's a local guy, or that's at least right. He has been. He's got Cincinnati ties, so we promise we won't get into the Reds or the Bengals or anything like that today, right?
Hey, at least football's starting this weekend to take the stink of the Reds off of us.
There you go. Let's dive into the important topic around here.
That's right. So yeah, as I mentioned, we want to talk a little bit about smart manufacturing, smart factories, industrial IoT. This is a topic I kind of wanted to get into because I feel like a lot of times the stuff we usually talk about on the podcast, we've talked a lot about healthcare, retail, hospitality. I feel like it's a lot of stuff where the technology that we discuss is something that's very visible to all of us. You know, we see the technology as it's growing in healthcare. We see it in retail. Like we get to experience it. But I feel like in manufacturing, unless you are in that world, living in that world and working in that world, the common person doesn't get to see a lot of that stuff and a lot of the innovation. And there's some fascinating innovations that are happening there that are making manufacturing so much faster, easier, more productive than it ever was. We're a long way from Henry Ford figuring out the production line. You know, it's a constantly evolving world. So, Mike, I want you to kick us off and start off by talking a little bit about, you know, what is a smart factory? What makes manufacturing smart right now?
Yeah, no, it's a great great intro to this topic. And it really is, you know, the digital cross-section of, you know, the manufacturing plant with, you know, having a digital initiative. And, you know, you try to be very tactical about what that means. But a few examples, you know, or things you see in terms of really advanced digitization, such as cobots, you know, humans working alongside robotics where they coexist, they co-interact. You see it even beyond just the technologies on the shop floor. I mean, you see it in the way they approach the EHS, the environmental health and safety side. I mean, green initiatives around, you know, the smart factory are huge. I can remember being there in Evendale, Ohio, walking around the General Electric plant looking for what we called at the time lean treasure hunts. Where do we have leakages of certain, you know, water lines or air compressor lines? Where do we have lights that were on that needed to be turned off? Now I go to these same plants or I go to other plants, you know, across the country. Everything's automated. You just walk out on the floor and the lights kind of follow you, right? Everything's automated. There's more sensors, And these are passive and dynamic sensors to tell you, hey, you've got an issue over here in this sector of your plant. You need to go look at it. You've got a piece of equipment that's underperforming. Just the prognostics and diagnostics that you can get, you know, when you really take that technology suite into your factory is pretty impressive. You're talking about kind of control room, control tower type of control over, as you brought up, you know, an automotive manufacturing line. You look at what Tesla's done out there at the old General Motors Toyota plant, NUMMI, out there in Fremont, which is now all Tesla. It's pretty amazing. You can see that they'll show you that technology on YouTube videos and whatnot. And it does almost look like something out of Hollywood, right? I mean, this robot's building robots.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I always find fascinating. That's when you start getting into the are we talking about the future of Skynet here, you know, or right. The robots building the robots to overtake us. But no, it's amazing technology. You know, you kind of reminded me of something back in my previous gig before coming to Blue Star. I worked for a food service company that provided the supplies and tools that you needed to, you know, run food service. Mm-hmm. And my first week there, I got to take a trip to a company called Volrath that operates out of Wisconsin. And they make food pans and other, you know, food service supplies like for buffet lines and, you know, buffet setups. And they had a highly automated setup with lots of awesome robots. It was just fascinating watching these robots making these pans and them telling us how in the past, like, you know, they had to do all this stuff by hand or with, you know, having machinery and processes that were very different. And it was amazing. And I remember somebody asking that question of, well, hey, aren't the robots replacing the people? And they very succinctly told us, like, no. In fact, everybody who had that kind of job before, we've either turned them into somebody who could operate those robots or somebody who's doing some of the finishing touches or QA once they're done with that, because there's only so much the robot can actually do. Mm-hmm. And I just love that idea of that synergy of, you know, we're bringing in all these new cool innovations and robots, but also making it something, the cobots.
Yeah,
that's the perfect.
You kind of have to go there, right? Because, I mean, when you think about it, the complexity of a typical manufacturing floor, I was reading up in an article and it kind of framed it out for me because I didn't think about it. You know, how complex is automotive making? I mean, I think the average is 30,000 parts goes into a typical automobile. I mean, that's just incredible. Just the orchestration that happens there. But when you think about the manufacturing floor, highly complex, cobots seem to be, you know, the answer, at least in the short term. I mean, you can't program a robot to be as smart enough to you know, navigate the intricacies of a manufacturing floor. So yeah, cobots, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Mike, I kind of want to turn to you to talk a little bit about industrial IoT. I think most of us have heard the term IoT, Internet of Things, by now. We get the concept of, you know, all these connected devices, and we think about it usually within our homes, you know, having smart appliances or, you know, smart cameras, the things that are all tied together, usually cloud-based and connected to your phone and somewhere where you can manage things quickly and easily from a single device. Well, IoT in the industrial space and manufacturing is that, but kicked up a serious notch from what I understand. Tell us a little bit about the differences between those.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Sometimes those terms are used kind of interchangeable, but I think you're right. You know, we come to know the IoT space as, you know, we've got a refrigerator that tells us when it needs a water filter change, or we can create a shopping list on it. And it's a connected device and usually through some sort of a Wi-Fi or some sort of a gateway. When you start focusing on the industrial Internet of Things, you know, the architecture and the backbone of that technology, you know, really is the same. I mean, you know, Qualcomm's a big player in this space, and what we're seeing now on 5G into the IoT space is quickly finding itself ushering into the IIoT space. And you're going to see things in when it comes to manufacturing that start to do with, you know, this concept of XR, right? Different virtual realities, augmented realities. You're going to see things like 5G NR or 5G private cellular networks within the factory. So there's much more control over the data, the latency issues are not there. You can have, you know, a tremendous amount of density of devices that are connected. And again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier, having that single pane of glass, a type of a cockpit view. That's where I really see a lot of this, you know, a lot of these parallels and similarities in the way this technology kind of comes out through the consumer space and then finds its way to drive a more productive supply chain, a more efficient and a more safe manufacturing plant. Even things such as warehousing, you know, we were talking there and it had me thinking a lot about just how adaptive robotics and some of the industrial Internet of Things have become towards soft goods. I mean, you know, trying to do pick and place with robots to help somebody who might be on an Amazon line, you know, packaging up something in a COVID world we've ordered offline. You know, these things have different soft grips and ways to sense with machine vision what it is, where it's at in the box. You can have a lot more chaos in the system, and, you know, IIoT type of solutions help kind of solve those problems and, you know, just drive better efficiencies into whether it's a warehouse or, again, the manufacturing space or field services for that matter.
Yeah, when you hear about some of these sexy terms that we've talked about here, AI, machine learning, deep learning, and we've talked about, you know, how that is manifesting itself in the industrial world in real time. I mean, it is definitely happening. And you know, another phrase that I came across in researching for this is the concept of end-to-end visibility. And I think most manufacturers, certainly, you know, geez, this pandemic really showed some cracks in some supply chain that we've talked about. You know, where is it? How can we get it? Don't know. So a lot of manufacturers are starting to use that end-to-end visibility term. You know, they want to know where the products are, when they are, how they get to, where they are in the process, those types of things. And you can't do that without an IIoT type of environment.
Right.
Things have to be sensed, connected, you know, whether in it's a blend of technology, right? It's beacons, it's RFID. Yeah, it's traditional barcode scanning and stuff like that. But definitely is only going to, you know, continue to run downhill, this notion of IIoT in industry.
Yeah. When I was reading the article on BizTech about smart factories and manufacturing, I thought one of the interesting things they noted when they compared the difference between IoT and IIoT was the protection aspect. You know, whereas, again, we were talking about with, you know, the IoT we're familiar with typically operates off of cloud services. Mm-hmm. And those services are, you know, kind of mass public type services that are available out there for everybody to connect to. And there's obviously some potential vulnerabilities that could be involved there, you know, which has been brought up as a concern, you know, as we move to this continuously connected and highly digital world.
Mm-hmm.
But in the industrial space, you've got to put a little bit more of a lid on that.
Oh, man,
You can't just use some, you know, consumer-level cloud, you know, services that everybody's – you can't be using Amazon Web Services that everybody's using out there. It's got to be something that's contained within that facility and within that company in order to make sure that you're highly protected, that no one else has access and can get in there.
You've got intellectual property there, right? That,
exactly.
That is – yeah, that's your gold – your pot of gold is everything that's behind those walls, yeah.
Very much so. Well, Mike, you've kind of hit on a little bit of it already, but tell us a little more about some of the benefits of getting into smart manufacturing and using IIoT.
Yeah, you know, look, I think you guys were just talking about it and something we could expand on, but it really is a lot about the visibility end-to-end, or we used to call it, you know, my former great mentor from Ford Motor Company used to talk to me about wing-to-wing solutions, you know, and I think, you know, when you think about it in a traditional sense, and I always like to give very practical terms, I think people can relate to it. You know, if you're in sourcing and you're supplying some raw materials to build some goods, and then it's going to go to the end customer, you know, you used to get an advanced shipment notice. You used to think it was pretty cool. You could see when something left the plant. But then you start to think about, how can I see that through the whole value chain? And really, it goes to a lot of what we talked about here with this COVID environment. Contact tracing, where are my products? Where are my goods? What is the asset visibility? And not only is it important for big OEMs, but I think the end users really, really do need it. We'll probably talk that more about the market, the technology space we play between Honeywell and Blue Star. But those type of benefits to having an IIoT kind of technology stack and products that really embrace that and have become smart really does open up a lot of possibilities. Now, I'm not saying it's easy. I think a lot of people get intimidated by, what am I going to do with all these sensors? I can have a mobile phone that's got accelerometers and drop detection. You can talk about, you know, cars and stuff that have tremendous amounts of sensors and autonomous driving. You know, there's just a full range and full spectrum. But I think companies that, you know, especially those that want to have the competitive edge out there, they look for that stuff to bring a lot of value, and they, you know, they build an ecosystem around it. And so you hear a lot of the big players, especially out there in Silicon Valley, talk about how much more of an addressable market this opens up and just how much benefit you're going to see in areas like manufacturing, like transportation, healthcare, agriculture, retail, just smart cities, you know, gridlock, you know, security, what else is there? Energy infrastructure. Those are places that I think are going to benefit the most. And I really do. I think a lot of times we think about, well, how's technology going to help me on the cost curve? Sure, it will be there. But I actually think it's going to drive a lot more productivity. It's going to drive a lot more speed. And it's hard to believe because we're in an always connected world today. but you know, you can always do things faster. And I think that's going to really help a lot of companies compete in a global world, especially as we learn to come out of this. And, you know, we do these type of remote interfaces, and, you know, we'll have more remote manufacturing support, you know, with these facilities, warehouses, and field service. I mean, I really do believe that, you know, the onset of drones and drones around us in an ecosystem is going to be very, very strong, very, very huge. So those are the way I see a lot of the benefits of it. So it goes far beyond cost. I think that's a given, right? That will bring us a lot of cost savings and drive a lot of value. But I think the safety aspects of it and the new solutions, the ideas and the innovation that just hasn't even happened yet is coming. I think that's what's exciting. When I think about the next 5 to 10, 20 years, and even what my kids, you know, how they stand to benefit from IIoT solutions in the future.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, we've kind of touched a couple times here on the whole end-to-end, wing-to-wing. I love that. I think that's really cool. This idea of, you know, of everything being connected and of having this real-time information all over your entire chain and within your business. On my kind of side gig, another one of my gigs that I do for Blue Star, I work on our AppWare Solutions campaigns, which is our end-user marketing campaions. I did one recently. Actually, it's been maybe about 6 months or so ago now, for Honeywell, actually, with a company called Plex. Who is all about platforms for ERP and MES within manufacturing. And their tagline I thought was so smart. And it's probably, I don't know if it's something they created or if it's just something that's out there, but they said connecting the shop floor to the top floor, which is the idea of everything you've got going on in the actual manufacturing environment, having real-time connectivity to the folks in the executive wing, potentially, you know, or someone who's working in an office building, you know, that has their own set of processes and they have, you know, their own ERP system. And a lot of times these two systems aren't talking to each other as much as they should, or if they are, it's kind of on a bit of a delay. So, Mike, I was curious from your perspective, you know, what have you heard about that, you know, the ERP, MES integration, or just the integration in general between what's happening on the shop floor throughout an entire company in order to, you know, facilitate a you know, much smoother manufacturing process and really stay on top of what's happening?
Yeah, I think it's a great topic. And I think, you know, it's been a long journey, actually, when you think about, you know, ERP. And I like how you said that, man, the shop floor to the top floor, you know, to the old ivory tower, as they would say. I can remember being a young engineer and we would do a lot of Kaizens. We would do daily stand-up meetings. We would have we'd have our Kaizen boards, right, where we'd look at, you know, cost, quality, delivery, safety. And, you know, now you're starting to see things that are much more digital in terms of the way you can have the visibility into the, you know, what's going on in the shop floor. How is your utilization? How are you on your fulfillment? You're on time to, you know, to promise. You know, it's really moved. I think it's helping us move ourselves from you know, a bit more of a collaborative that's actually out on the floor. And typically it's those that are supporting the manufacturing and the team members out there building the product, to driving a lot more real-time awareness to what's going on to executives who are deploying capital, making sourcing decisions, trying to decide where to allocate products to customers, where they should be selling, you know, what inventory should they be moving on. I think anytime, you know, and you could be in finance, you could be in accounting, you could be in general management. I think anytime you're more connected to the widgets you make and how you're doing to serve your customer, the better the overall experience is going to be. And I do think companies, you know, JDA Manhattan, those are on the leading edge of really, again, embracing digitization from their software onto the shop floor, are helping, you know, kind of carve out a new segment. I would just add an anecdotal story that, you know, I had some time there at a company, General Cable, and just there in Northern Kentucky. We did a lot of that in one of my plants down in Texas. We had a facility where we needed a transportation management system. We didn't have that wing-to-wing visibility. We just didn't know when stuff was getting loaded onto trailers, when it had rolled, couldn't properly, you know, deliver the fulfillment and the dates to our customer. You know, taking a solution, you know, like a TMS for Manhattan, putting that in with other type of AIDC and sensors, you know, it really solved a big problem for us. And again, it goes back to what I said before about, you know, taking the technology, finding a way to apply it. Then you put all that together with an ERP, with a WMS, with a TMS system. Yeah, and you can, again, deliver really, really solid outcomes for your customer, because that's you know, they want to know when they're going to get it. They want a fair price in the market. And you got to have that information at your fingertip to serve them. And a lot of time, that data goes beyond that shop floor, and it goes to, as you said, the top floor individuals that are there to support the customers or managing the business.
Yeah, when you think about, you know, as the progression of IIoT happens out there, I was thinking through some of the pinch points, and I was reading up on an article, and this helped me kind of understand the new world, or the world that we're getting into, is that in the past, mechanical engineers, when it comes to manufacturing, were and still are very, very important. However, today, software engineering is equally as important, if not more important, because a lot of what we're talking about here is data-driven. You can't have wing-to-wing visibility if you don't know how to manipulate the data. I mean, if you just have this pile of data with nothing analyzing it or whatnot, you can't make decisions. It doesn't do any good for the ivory tower. So it's the idea that software is going to continue to be kind of that critical portion moving forward in the whole IIoT. And it's a wild west. There are we've touched on probably hundreds of areas where software development can be integrated to make the entire process and any kind of manufacturing even better. So that's kind of interesting to figure out how software, you know, engineering, really, really key. And when I think about it from a reseller perspective, you know, okay, I've got my staff and what we do, and I know I preach about this all the time, but software engineering, being able to program in some of these things, really critical to integrate yourself into some of these new opportunities that are definitely going to be coming down the line as it relates to IIoT.
Definitely. So we've already touched on it a couple of times, but let's talk a little bit about the COVID world, obviously, and how that's affected manufacturing and industry. Obviously, when things kicked off and this was beginning, you heard a lot of stories about manufacturing plants and industries that just had to shut down or had to figure out how they were going to cope with this because they were seeing outbreaks because of just the way their environment was set up and the proximity of people. Mm-hmm. And then as they've gone into this recovery phase now and started reopening, I have to imagine that a lot of these companies that previously maybe weren't really diving into smart manufacturing, IIoT, real-time data, that they've had to dive in head first because that was going to be the way for them to get back to business in this current world where you're trying to protect your employees, keep your operations running smoothly. So, Mike, I want to ask you, you know, what other kind of things did you hear about as, you know, as COVID struck and as businesses have started, you know, figuring out how they're going to get back to it? Where are they taking these tools we've been discussing and using that in order to make a safe and still productive environment for their employees?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And first, let me say, you know, you talk about the challenge of our decade. I mean, this has been a real learning opportunity to be thrown right into this. And I just want to say for those listening that are frontline workers or were helping us there, thank you so much for all the support you've done. I think it actually starts there. I mean, I can tell you at my personal experience at Honeywell, that was the first place, you know, we turned to. And, you know, my wife happens to be a frontline worker, and you think about their safety, but how they can continue to help people. The healthcare space, I think, needed, you know, immediate attention put on it. And it really does come down to things like contact tracing, social distancing, just cleaning procedures. We take washing our hands and sterilization, you know, for granted, but, you know, it's pretty amazing when you see a virus like this that can, you know, move around and is so quickly, can infect somebody. That was where I started to see a lot of real technology. What can you do more with the cameras, your own devices? I mean, this concept of bring your own device to work, which sometimes companies supported, other times they didn't, that really became a tool and a mechanism to help fight COVID-19 and help solve solutions. That's really important because, you know, there was, you know, assessments and things in clinical settings where healthcare professionals weren't even actually in the room and they were maybe doing an evaluation of a patient. They were able to do that from distance, and it's, you know, solutions, from the technology space that make that possible. Again, back to, you know, a lot of machine vision. I think beyond that, we saw a lot of opportunity for proximity alerting. I mean, when I think about some of the more traditional spaces, warehouses, manufacturing, you don't want to be there you want to have solutions in there that are there to help keep people safe, not hinder the work they're doing, right? And so it goes back to what, you know, we were talking about, Dean was talking about before there with the software engineering. We pivoted very quick, put a lot of emphasis on software and quick tools. These, you probably saw them as maybe if you've gotten back out there and you went to, you know, Home Depots or DIY type of stores or your grocery, where you might see them counting the number of individuals that are actually in the box in the physical store. those type of safety, you know, mechanisms and those type of quick apps and software to help them kind of manage the network and the traffic that's in the building and, you know, help put social distance into place in terms of how they walk up and down aisles. That was one that I think, you know, the, at least in the United States and Europe, the more developed countries jumped to very quick. The last thing I would say is when you turn to that warehouse space, I just want to come back to that. You know, a lot of times those workers are in close proximity, you know, they're moving across each other, having devices, having mobile computers, you know, devices that can signal to one another when they're within a radius, when they're getting too close, just to help practice social distancing. That was something that I thought was very innovative. And I don't think a lot of people would have kind of thought about the technology, again, the IoT technology they had on them, how it could be applied in industrial space to help them with proximity alerting. And we saw, you know, all companies, you know, kind of jump into some of those solutions, consumer and industrial alike. Those are some of the big things. And I think, you know, we've hit on a lot of the robotics and the co-robotics that obviously, you know, helped a lot. And you think about a warehouse worker and what the digitization and the e-commerce and this idea of manufacturing 4.0, how more of the work comes to a centralized user. They can have their space. They can, you know, pick, pack, and put, you know, boxes together, you know, for retail, for e-commerce. You know, those things I think were really a blessing that they were in place, because I do think that helped a lot with the workforce. But just a few, you know, technologies, a few solutions, software, hardware that I saw, you know, rapidly, you know, come to the aid of the healthcare, manufacturing, warehouse space.
Yeah. And if I could pick up on that real quick, because, you know, one of the things I think that we're seeing as well is mobile. Making, you know, smart manufacturing today has gone mobile on the shop floor in a lot of ways. So the mobile stations, you know, Mike was just touching on it where, you know, enabling the worker, it used to be, well, it still is today, but there are certain, in a manufacturing environment, certain pinch points where a lot of people will congregate, whether it's at a printer, you know, to get the labeling or whether, you know, something like that. But if you enable the worker with mobile stations, so we're seeing workstations that have full batteries and, you know, scanners and mobile devices on it, so enable that person to go around, still keep distance from other people, but still execute the job that needs to be done. So we're seeing, you know, obviously a large shift into mobility within a smart manufacturing world too.
Definitely. Mike, you mentioned something that kind of, you know, really resonated with me too, is that the idea, and we've kind of mentioned this a couple times on the show before, that where technology is right now, or where it was before we got into all of this, we were in a somewhat of a good place in some ways to actually be able to facilitate what we've had to do to survive this. And, you know, you think back even 20 years, what kind of technology we didn't have back then that would have made this even harder to handle, you know? The fact that, like, you know, that a lot of manufacturing and processes, you know, that are out there now in industry don't require as many people to be as tightly knit together. You know, again, we're not on that the assembly line is right. Not as much of a thing as it used to be, where you had to have, you know, 50, 60 people lined up shoulder to shoulder doing their little part, adding their little widget every time. Now we've, you know, we'd already developed to a place where that wasn't quite as necessary. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, companies that still did maybe have some of that in place, probably had a lot harder time than others. But again, I have to think that we were able to get back up and running as fast as we did because we already had a lot of innovation in place that maybe we just had to tweak or move to another level in order to get further than we were before.
Some industries aren't there yet. We talked about meat packing and stuff like that where they are. Literally, and I've read articles on how they're trying to automate that, and believe it or not, and it goes back to where we were in the beginning and the cobots and just, you know, trying to mimic what a human does a lot of times in the manufacturing floor, really, really difficult to do. Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly complex. We take it for granted because we're humans, I guess, right? Yeah. But complex.
These fingers and hands that we all have are very complex tools themselves, and it's hard to create a machine that can actually mimic with the kind of precision and touch that we have.
And the decision-making behind it and all that other good stuff. Exactly. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, Mike, I want to wrap up our conversation with the technology aspect, because obviously, you know, what we do, what you do at Honeywell, what we do at Blue Star is all about the devices and the products that help facilitate the kind of solutions and discussion that we're having today. So tell us a little bit about the technology behind IIoT, the mobile computers, the barcode scanners, the label printers, the stuff that Honeywell does. You know, what's available, what's out there, what is helping facilitate this transition?
Yeah, I think, you know, it starts with a lot of the sensing technologies and the scanning, especially. I mean, you think about, certainly we've had some conversation around the manufacturing floor, but direct part marking and the way that they're trying to kind of, you know, brand and hold, you know, product tracing, you know, through its life cycle you have to be able, you know, to have devices and solutions, whether it's with a worker or it's a fixed mounted solution, or it's, you know, embedded, you know, into a certain, you know, workflow or on a scan belt. You have to have these type of solutions. And again, mobile computers, a handheld, a fixed mounted scanner, and industrial printers to, you know, barcode to dot matrix to QR code these products. You know, there's a lot of forms in how you want to go, you know, barcode a product. But I think having robust sets of technologies, a full portfolio of solutions to go take to OEMs to help them get smart, to help them with the IIoT transition is key. I'm still amazed, you know, today how many customers I meet at a trade show, or, you know, prior to COVID was meeting at trade shows, that knew they needed something like that, wanted to get away from pad and paper and visual inspections, and, you know, are just very curious about how this technology can help solve it for them. You know, we as an industry have to keep working on our storytelling and our, you know, our you know, win stories, and where, you know, even small, medium businesses can and adopt this. I think the large companies have always led the way, but I think there's still a lot of room for, you know, companies that haven't really started in the IoT journey or in a very early stage, because it is a pretty long process. And I think it is a continuous process, given the nature of which technology moves, the speed at which technology moves. That's a lot of the, you know, solutions we bring to the market. And I guess I would say really what we're seeing coming up next, just to foreshadow, the machine vision and the scanning technologies that we have in scanners today are becoming, you know, just leading edge. You know, you just don't have to have bespoke devices for bespoke workstations. You can have, you know, technology in a scan engine that can handle a variety of workflows. It can be propagated across your enterprise. And then you've got this, you know, exciting technology that we're starting to see in the IoT space called 5G. That's going to be huge for manufacturing. I really do believe that's going to usher in a lot more private networks. It's going to have people rethinking a little bit about how they want to approach, you know, Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi 6 versus 5G. And I think it's going to do a lot for the actual products themselves. I think you're going to see more and more products push further into that IoT or IoT space where they have 5G radios on them, better latency, better experience, whether it's, you know, business to business or business to consumer type of applications. So there's a little bit about, you know, what the automated information data capture, you know, how we, you know, we're providing solutions and you know, trying to help usher in more, you know, industrial Internet of Things type of solutions.
Yeah, when you think of the technology of IIoT, not only the hardware, and thanks, Mike, for you know, talking about that. And I think when you think about the holistic view of what IIoT means and how it relates to the VAR, I think Honeywell's actually got a couple of other areas that they can really enable partners as well. One of them's in, and we've talked about it a little bit, and what they call smart and secure collaboration. So I absolutely believe that a lot of the innovation that happens will come from a collaboration from those that are in the environment today. What better way to make your plant more efficient, or your, you know, the manufacturing process smarter, if you will, is to talk to the, collaborate with the people that are doing it on a day-to-day basis and introduce the technology into that flow so that you can make it better. So secure, smart collaboration, Honeywell's got options there. Analytics. We talked a little bit about, you know, I said the pile of data, right? You need to do something with the pile of data. Analytics is critical, and I think we talked about it with Sandy and from Tagit in a recent one when he was talking about RFID. And yeah, you know, it's great that you can get all this data, but man, you really got to be able to do something with it. And so when you have a suite of analytics products like Honeywell does, that can enable a reseller to dive into that portion of it as well. You know, it's not just the traditional scanning of a barcode scanner. You need to be able to come to the table with even more solutions. And then finally, right where Mike ended there, the data management, you know, what you call it, an on-site control, you know, having to be able to, again, manage the data, utilize it so that you can make business decisions, one, but also utilize it so that you can drive efficiencies within the smart manufacturing environment. So the tools are out there, and leading companies like Honeywell, they have the ability to enable the resellers. It's just kind of unlocking some of these doors, dipping a toe and going after it, and you can benefit, you know, from it.
Definitely. Yeah, the idea of the whole data thing that you mentioned and figuring out what you're actually going to do with it, that's one of those things that I always feel a lot of companies get the idea that, like, hey, we need to be using data. We need to be pulling data. We need to be
we need to have data, but then it's that part of taking that data and figuring out what you're going to do.
What do you do with it?
That's a huge leap. I think one of our podcasts we did something about healthcare, and I know in my research I came across something that suggested that like healthcare organizations, typically like there's like a large percentage. A survey went out or something. That a large percentage of them knew that they needed data and they knew that they were supposed to be tracking it and were doing so. But most of them, like a very large portion of those, also within a year or so, had stopped utilizing that data or didn't know what to do with it anymore.
Right.
And there's a huge gap there between collecting the data and making it actionable and figuring out what it means to your business. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think partners like Honeywell, Blue Star, and some of our software partners can really step in to help them figure that piece out.
100%. And we've talked about this as well, you know, the ecosystem that you build. And you know, Honeywell, others, they have great ecosystems to it that can enable resellers to start going into some of these directions. Because you can't do it alone, you know, to a certain degree. It's good to have your staff and train your staff and be able to pivot a little bit on some of the programming that you might be doing. But you can also lean on an ecosystem, or in this case with Honeywell, they already have a lot of tools that they've made, that they their software provides as well. So
yeah,
it's definitely out there.
Agree. Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for this conversation. I feel like there's a lot of points here we could easily dive further into.
Just scraped the surface. We might need to bring Mike back again to talk about
it. You mentioned 5G a couple times, and I know that's a topic we've kind of got on our future board to figure out. So we might have to come back to you to talk a little bit more about that, because you seem like you know a thing or two about it. So that's what you get. You come on this show, you know something. Yep.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. You guys got to bring the graders and Skyline.
Fair enough.
Oh, see, that's why I love talking to Cincinnati people. They know what's good out there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, before we move on to our recurring segments, I do want to take a moment and thank our founding members, of which Honeywell is one. Thank you so much.
We appreciate
your support for this podcast. It's what makes it possible. I also want to give a special shout out this episode to Sam Claney, our in-house writer and researcher. She came up with a lot of the great research for this particular pod and found some great articles that I've been using. So Sam, thank you so much if you're listening.
Kind of on your theme behind the scenes, right? IIoT exactly. And all this stuff that happens in manufacturing is all behind the scenes. Sam is our behind the scenes.
Yeah. Exactly. We're going to get her on here one of these days.
One of these days.
She likes it or not.
Maybe we got to bring her dog Luna on. Maybe that's the way we
there
get
you go. Because everybody likes dogs. Yeah.
Right.
So for our listeners out there, if you want to connect with us, if you have some of your own thoughts or interests around smart manufacturing, IIoT, you can always find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. Emails techconnect@bluestarinc.com. And hey, if you like the show, please go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and review. We might read some of those on air. If you've got some questions, you can ask them there as well. All right, we're going to get into our recurring segments, which is Value to the VAR and Tech Connecting with Us. We're going to start with Value to the VAR. This is the segment where we kind of wrap up the conversation we've had, talk a little bit about, you know, what this discussion and smart manufacturing, IoT, what it means to our VAR partners, what they should be thinking about. Mike, you had an interesting article you sent over to me, kind of a Q&A that you did that was posted on VAR Insights, I believe, where you kind of talked about the digital transformation in general and what it means to a lot of industries. There was a specific question that they asked you that, you know, you kind of took a broad response to, but I want to kind of hone in on that around manufacturing and industry, which is, you know, what resources and emerging technologies should VARs be leveraging in order to help manufacturers get smart? So if a VAR is coming to us or you and saying, hey, I know this is happening, I don't quite know where to start, what do you recommend for them?
Yeah, I think the technology I, you know, first would start with is, you know, very traditional, focus on the core. So I would look at the, you know, mobility aspects of it in terms of mobile computing, scanning and printing needs. But I think you quickly usually find out real quick, it, you know, a customer has something that goes beyond, you know, capturing a barcode, you know, something to assist with a workflow. And that's where I think we've talked about it a lot. This is where the software elements really start to come in. And I think trying to understand what are the operational insights, the operational intelligence that they need in terms of their, you know, their enterprise, that to me is something that I think VARs can bring forward, because it is this idea of moving more towards consultative white glove service solution selling. And it starts to really pull in much more bundling in the world of, you know, hardware and software, you know, together as one, you know, the better together story. So that's something I talk about a lot. That's something we try to probe and ask as we do VOCs, voice of customer, and we sit down with a client or with a VAR. We really try to do help understand that, or if anything, just showcase what a hardware and software pairing can do. I think sometimes the customer doesn't know what they want until you show it to them. And so it's always very helpful to take real world wins and use cases, white papers, put that in front of somebody, put a presentation or a live demo in front of somebody. That has been very, very powerful. And I've seen that, especially that demo piece, when you can demonstrate software and hardware through these type of WebEx remote sessions, very powerful. We've been able to do that with our VAR partners and our global community, because you absolutely need people to help evangelize the message. The world's just too big, and this is too big of a market for somebody to try and do it alone. So partnerships are absolutely critical in that endeavor.
Yeah, I would agree. And to pick up on that, you know, I love where you were going with your tech stack. I can visualize what a technology stack is, and the word I put next to it is build your technology stack. You know, and it's okay, to broaden your ecosystem with some of these players. And at the end of the road, as we've all talked about, IoT is not stopping. It's not going anywhere, right? It's only going to continue to grow. Connected devices is only going to continue. We've talked about here just the necessity from a smart manufacturing environment. You have to be there. You have to be connected end-to-end, wing-to-wing. That's where it's going to go. So if you want to play in that, you have to have the discipline to be able to understand all the different technologies that are going into play. Sensors, IoT, RFID, things like that. You have to understand that software is a significant component to it. You have to understand the data manipulation is a significant component of it. And when you think about those, you look at your tech stack today, if you have holes in those cracks, you need to start filling them in, and filling them in through partners, ecosystems, stuff like that. That is definitely the way to go. Resources are out there. You know, Blue Star does things like our Tech Connect Live, where we try to introduce people, software development companies, into the channel just for this purpose, because it's impossible to try to stay out on the forefront of what's going on. Leverage manufacturers like Honeywell. They've got a software, you know, companies that are programs where they onboard them and bring them into their ecosystem and test it with their products and stuff like that. And so they're all well vetted. So these are just some of those resources and some of the mindset that I think that a reseller's got to get into in order to move forward.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to add to that, because you both hit the nail on the head with the stuff I was thinking about, and especially always that aspect of don't be afraid to rely on resources and going out to partners. Don't be afraid to ask for some help. You know, that you never have to take the mentality that you have to walk in there and have it all figured out yourself. And it's okay to walk in there and say, hey, I know this stuff is happening. Let's talk about what's going on with you right now. And then I've got great people I'm going to go to and talk about what we can do to make this happen. And Mike, you mentioned like the case study thing.
Yeah.
We had our
huge fan of a case study.
Yeah. We had our podcast on effective sales presentations a little bit ago.
Yep.
And one of the things we mentioned is this idea of like, if you're going in and presenting or pitching something, that having a use case, having a case study, having an example of, hey, here's what we literally have done with someone, or even if you didn't do it, like here's literally what has happened. Like, let's talk about this particular company and their manufacturing setup and where they were before, where they are now after adding in all of these cool new resources and tools and technologies and data. You know, that's powerful stuff to help someone realize how they can go from where they are now to where they could be.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid to use that.
No, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up with our favorite segment each week, which is What's Tech Connecting with You? This is where we just kind of, you know, talk about something cool or interesting that we have been reading about, playing with, using, just something in the tech world that has caught our attention or eye. Mike, I'll let you start. What's tech connecting with you right now?
Well, I'm going to just turn to my my passion. I'm a pilot, and I like to fly general aviation aircraft. I've seen a tremendous amount of digital twin, digital modeling. That's been really, really exciting. I mean, when I learned to fly, it was paper charts. Now we have these technologies called ForeFlight and Garmin, where you fly almost digitally. You know, it's very, very cool technology. And one other area where I talked a little bit about digital technology is just this idea of digital twins for large assets. I think it's pretty cool to think about when you're driving down the road and, you know, some of the latest cars, somebody could be looking at a digital twin of that model, what the acceleration is, how you drive the car, how you brake it, what's going on with the engine, the internal combustion, how efficient is it? That to me, just being an engineer at heart, I mean, I really like that. I get into that stuff. So I see it in my passion, and I, you know, see it when I look around at some of the big technology firms and automotive manufacturers that are innovating. So digital twins is pretty cool. I like that technology.
Yeah. Let's go back to your piloting there real quick, because, you know, so you're telling me you've got some technology now that you're leaning on when you're up in the cockpit. You got your phone out and the phone's like leading the way?
Yeah, usually use an iPad, and you know, picture yourself in a 1978 Cessna 172, right? It doesn't have a lot of digitization in it, right? But you have these connected apps, and you have a little GPS radio transceiver, and it will pick up real-time satellite weather. It'll pick up traffic in the sky around you, so you get a digital mapping of the airplanes, and these are commercial jets and other aviation people that are flying around you, their altitude, their speed, their heading. Again, brings a whole new element of safety to the world of general aviation. That, to me, is really cool stuff. So, yeah, like I said, you guys bring the graders and Skyline. I'll bring the airplane, and we'll fly.
That is cool because I'm envisioning. I mean, I got to reframe myself on what a recreational pilot looks like. I totally had, Mike, in my mind, a map on your lap, you know, and you're peeking out the window looking at, am I going up I-75? You know, where am I in relation to the world? But no, it's all on your iPad, right?
I'm glad you're not a pilot.
Well, yeah. As you can see, I have zero experience flying.
If I see Dean step into a cockpit, I'm going to be like, no, I'm going to need to get off, please. This guy doesn't even, this guy still thinks he needs to stare at the landmarks in order to get by.
Hey, you never know.
Normally I ask you what's TechConnect next, but I'm going to go ahead because Mike kind of just stole mine, actually.
Oh, did he?
The digital twinning thing.
Right.
It was in one of the articles that I was looking at for, you know, our discussion about smart manufacturing. We had talked about what happened in the time of COVID and how they've dealt with that. And they mentioned the whole idea of digital twinning and virtual factory tours to help, you know, people who may have normally needed to actually go to factories and walk the floor and see what's going on and routinely, you know, see what's happening in the space.
Right.
They don't have to do that now because they've got, you know, these options to look at a virtual representation of that factory floor that is being created using, you know, smart cameras and, you know, and infrared technology that is, you know, scanning the floor and mapping out what's happening in real time. So instead they can, you know, we're not at holodecks yet. Like you can't step into a virtual room necessarily and see it, but you can still like pull up a virtual look at your factory floor and see what's going on. See, you know,
I'll be darned,
you know, walk the line, like literally walk it virtually and see what's happening there. And it made me think, you know, where else could you apply this technology? I had not thought about the piloting, obviously, but that's definitely one. And, you know, just all these other places where I could see you, you know, where it could be useful to have that twinning technology where you could, you know, take a virtual picture of an environment. And I mean, maybe you could, you know, throw on some, you know, VR goggles or something and actually simulate it and you know, interact with it without actually having to go there. And again, that leads into the whole concept of remote work and how someone on the other side of the country, the other side of the world could still have, you know, direct insight into what's happening in their business in real time just by being able to virtually twin something. So,
well, and actionable too. Well, you throw in the whole cobot. Is a cobot meaning the guys in Phoenix and the manufacturing plants in Maine? I don't know.
Yeah.
Could
that's, be. That's awesome stuff. Love that stuff.
That is awesome
Dean, what's tech connecting with you this
week? All right, I'm going to go genetics. Because I watched another program yesterday, and man, this has got me thinking. You know, so you guys know what CRISPR is, right? Yep. It's this protein that it can be. It is utilized. I guess it's Cas9 is the actual thing, and it can slice a DNA, and it's being used. Well, over the last 5 years, it's like, how is it being used? But the one phrase that I now have more clarity on is germline. So germline, so when you get into genetics, there's now a current debate going on about do you genetically modify, I'm talking about animals and or humans, right? Do you genetically modify somebody after there's been conception, if you will, but the germline refers to the actual, you know, the sperm and the egg. Do you modify that? Because if you modify the germline, you are making a change to evolution, right? So that is the current debate amongst the bioengineers and things of that nature. There is a strong consensus from the scientific world that we do not want to mess with the germline. You can't, because if you mess with the germline, now you're messing with evolution. If you do that in a human, now every human after that, you know, that germline that you modify is going to have those genetic traits, whatever it is that you did. Sometimes they might be for good points. You know, well, we're going to take out the gene for sickle cell anemia. And now every person after that person will no longer have that gene. Or do you do it post? Post that, where you're fixing the genetics after that. Man, really fascinating stuff that's happening, and it makes you know, scared and a little bit. You want to learn more about what the heck is going on in genetics right now? Because I'm telling you, it is going downhill fast. Downhill in the sense that it's just
picking up steam.
Yes, yeah. Picking up steam very, very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. The ethical debate around that stuff is always fascinating because, yeah, you get into some people saying, like, we can't play God.
Can't play
but
God.
But then you also have some people saying, well, what if we could prevent cancer? What if we could prevent sickle cell anemia?
Exactly.
What if we could excise disease and deformities, you know, from people, you know, before they actually occur and give everybody the opportunity to live long, healthy lives? But then, yes, you know, and that all sounds great. And if you can do that and that is the actual goal, that sounds amazing. But you're always going to get to that point where someone's going to try to decide, well, I want my kid to have blue eyes, or I want my kid to, you know, to be smart, and to have a leg up on everybody. And then you start getting into, like, what's the ethics of doing that? And you'd probably get into some divides about who can afford to do that, who can't afford to that. And things start getting messy.
But then it got even more complex, and I don't want to get too deep in this, but they did use the use case of sickle cell. And if you take that genetic out, as it turns out, that gene is actually a preventer for malaria.
Oh.
So if you take out that genetic code, you are now more susceptible to malaria. So when you think about where malaria is in you know, the parts and countries that occurs. Anyway, when you start playing God and you think that you're doing a good thing, it's more complex than that. And when you just step back and think about, okay, if I tweak this little genetic code, I think I'm doing good, but I don't even know if I'm doing bad somewhere else. You see where
you could start the zombie apocalypse. Is
wow.
What you're saying here.
Well, okay, yeah, we have talked about that many times. We are going to start the zombie apocalypse around here. Anyway, not to get too deep, but CRISPR, and now you know the term germline. That's the debate that's going on there.
Well,
anyway,
that's what's Tech Connecting with us this week. Mike Noyes, I want to thank you so much
for joining us
today. We appreciate your insight. Like I said, we might have you on again at some point.
Absolutely.
To talk a little bit more about some of
IoT is not going anywhere, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, thanks for listening today. We appreciate your time. It's time for us to unplug. Until next time, stay connected. High-performance, error-free labeling is critical for many industries. The Honeywell PX940 family of industrial printers was developed for companies that are subjected to fines for non-compliance to regulatory standards and return shipments due to unreadable barcodes. The PX940 series prints barcodes that are defect-free and 100% accurate every time. The fully integrated verifier allows for quick setup, even when printing and verifying different labels. Bad labels that do not meet an established threshold are voided and a new label is reprinted. And in an era of miniaturization, the PX940 will print accurately on small labels, edge to edge, with little error tolerance. To learn more, contact your Blue Star Honeywell representative.